Ground Cover News is a nonprofit street paper that was founded in April 2010 as a means to empower low-income persons to make the transitions from homeless to housed and from jobless to employed. Vendors purchase each copy of the Ground Cover News regular edition at our office for 50 cents. This money goes towards production costs. Vendors work selling the paper on the street for $2, keeping all income and tips from each sale. This audio production was made possible by the Ann Arbor District Library, recorded at Fifth Avenue Studios. If you consistently enjoy Ground Cover Speaks, continuing to buy physical newspapers from Ground Cover vendors ensures that we can sustain production. The physical paper and in-person interaction is at the heart of our work. You can find the link to our next audio recording in the upcoming print issue of Ground Cover News. Thanks for listening.
Special thanks to our print advertisers, the People's Food Co-op, St. Francis of Assisi Parish, First Baptist Church, Bethlehem United Church of Christ, the Office of Community and Economic Development, Cineholic, Art on a Journey, Ann Arbor for Public Power, Four Directions, and the Ypsilanti Food Co-op.
Ground Cover News opens the door for a new publication. Hi, my name is Elizabeth Kurtz, but I refer to myself as Lit, a name I gave myself shortly after losing my housing and landing on what we call the streets. Lit is short for Elizabeth because I found that outside of mainstream housing, there is little room for extra baggage, including one's name. I was shocked during the 2011-2012 school year to be among 4,000 teachers laid off and forced to reapply for our positions. Like many other teachers, I was not rehired, and what seemed like the blink of an eye, I was living in my car. The adjustment was difficult, and though I was reluctant to admit that I was quote-unquote homeless, just like others who were scavenging in trash cans and bottles or even selling the homeless paper, the reality set in. If I had any chance of survival after my savings and unemployment were depleted, I needed to have an income. The street paper concept, which started in New York during the 1980s and arrived in Ann Arbor in 2011 under the directorship of Susan Beckett, was a viable option, offering an opportunity to begin selling right away. I signed up and started selling and writing for it in 2013. By 2016, I was extremely honored that an article I wrote for Ground Cover entitled Living Out Here places one of the top five finalists in the category of Best Vendor Contribution when the International Street Paper Conference, INSP, was held in Athens, Greece, making me the first Ground Cover vendor to receive that honor. Jim Clark received the same recognition in 2019. A decade following the first year that I sold for Ground Cover, I am editing and publishing a magazine of my own entitled The Fringe. It offers an even more in-depth look at the lives of those who are unhoused. Ground Cover and the Street Paper Association have given many of those who are unhoused an ability to share our voices. They indeed offer a springboard and training ground for a publication such as mine. As an unhoused person, I know that it is necessary for a publication to exist that is seen through the lens of we who have experienced living through the crisis. The articles will be contributed by people who have experienced it as well. The first inaugural edition is dedicated to Earth Day, because who knows more about the Earth than those who have been forced to live directly on its soil? This magazine will not only be in print, but also online so that your friends and family from across the world can enjoy it. To find out more information about how you can support this endeavor, please scan the QR code included or visit Making the Fringe Happen at GoFundMe.com.
The People Are the Power by Ken Parks, Ground Cover Vendor number 490. In the 1960s and 70s, power to the people was a popular chant at rallies and marches. You could say it was a common mantra that carried the essence of the many movements for freedom. We need to consider power and how it works. What is its source? Meditar y analizar, as Fidel described his style, reflect and analyze. From science, we know power is the ability to move an object. I propose we think of power as the ability to get things done. Labor is the basic power to work on whatever project until completion. Study Marx and Engels to understand alienated labor and what the emancipation of labor looks like. Erich Fromm is among the many thinkers who studied and wrote about alienation. My understanding is that when labor is a commodity in the market, you lose agency of your labor power to those who buy your labor. If you agree to a written or unwritten contract, you lose any real ability to understand the results of your labor. Your power enters a maze of corporate processing, which investors use to promote the greatest profit, regardless of the waste or damage. Dumping waste into the environment is a common practice. Landfills are a huge industry. Nuclear waste will be in toxic sites beyond any time we can measure. To take responsibility for the results of our actions means to use our power with awareness and not allow anyone to use our power for their capital accumulation fetish. Both Buddhism and Marxism use dialectics to understand the play of opposites. Buddhism focuses on the middle path between the extremes of eternalism and nihilism. Marxism focuses on the analysis of data to understand the material world. Lenin studied the philosopher Hegel to work from the assumption that dialectics begins with the unity of opposites. I believe this unity is also the middle path. Everything is interrelated and interactive. Imperialism, the highest stage of capitalism by V.I. Lenin, is an important study of World War I dynamics. The Introduction to Medicine Buddha by Trungpa Rinpoche is a good introduction to Buddhist thinking on the play of reality. Our imagination is empowered by words such as these, and reality becomes a workable situation. I propose that the people are the power is a slogan that best points to our shared reality. Labor power in particular has its source in the working class. To use our power to serve the golden rule is the way to live happily ever after. We all want our life to be in our own hands. Compliance culture demands that you use your power for the designs of others. This puts us in constant gridlock with our own aspirations. The system uses compliance to channel everything to march to the beat of empire, as dictated by the deciders, as one or both President Bushes put it. Our body-mind unity can be experienced more completely as human beings if we practice natural breathing. It is the best step to natural mind. There are many teachers of mind training. Both Zen and Tibetan spiritual friends have helped me. The power of calm and clear points to the importance of using our power to do creative activity with the intention to benefit all beings without exception. If we free our minds, the rest will follow. Patti LaBelle sang that song. If we share our labor power for the common good, we can work to stop the march to nuclear war. Compost war, grow peace. Visit vfpgoldenruleproject.org.
Hello. Good evening, Americans. My name is Juliano Sanchez, and I'm reading what I've written about mythology. Roman gods in America. Mythology has always been about two things, money and power. It is the same today in America. We still live in ancient Rome, but 2023, we have the gods up on top, or at least men who think they are gods, billionaires whose families own and control everything. There are these few rich men on top, living like emperors. And then they're the rest of us on the bottom, just like Caesar. He was immortal and comparative himself to a god. These billionaires get into government and can do anything they want, and they always want more and more. So they become bored and psychopathic and chase frames or power or immortality. They have so much money that they make up wars and conflicts to keep society distracted and divided. Myth about gods having always been about them. Billionaires today want to believe that they are the gods. They are the ones who own the news mechanic, the propaganda, who hear on radio and television and society, media, the people, but all the myths they tell us and believe everything they say is the truth. They keep us working for them to keep us at each other's throat, stuck in the trap, believing that one day we might make it up to their level, but we never will. It's just a myth. We keep believing what they tell us, the American dream, and that we had people believing since their ancient back in Rome. The sorts of the myth divided us against each other and stopped us from loving and respecting each other. As a human being, race is one of those myths. Society keep pumping this into our head and embedding it in your mind through propaganda. That there are categories like black and white, but skin color is just a story people in power have told to control the masses so that we go on hating and fighting each other, distracting so we never understand each other. People are always more complex than that myth. I appear black to most people, but if you learn a little about my family history, you would know I am mixed of African, indigenous, Taino, Cuban, and white European, my ancestor from Europe. And everyone's blood is the same color, red. Always, people are so caught up in the myths that they look at someone and see black or white. But that's too simple. That what they want you to believe. For people of color or minorities, mythology is just a story of colonialism. I remember we grew up that my mother and grandmother in Cuba was so beautiful, with long, silky, and beautiful brown skin. They was descended from the Taino indigenous peoples who the first settled in Cuba. But I grew up in New York, and I know nothing about Taínos. We grew up learning Spanish because the Taíno language was wiped out along with their whole culture, which was killed off by Columbus and the Spanish when they enslaved them. Nobody talks about Taíno myth, but we all know about the Greeks and Roman ones. American society developed out of that. We are built on Rome and Greek and a history of people hands being chopped off. When you talk about mythology, what you mean is slavery, injustice, imperialism, selfishness, evil, wrongdoing, and the stuff that men in power have used to take over the world. Mythology is a history of controlling who got the power to make you believe. Rich people at the top live in their own world mythology. Maybe 20 rich families that own everything from the Rockefeller, DuPonts, the Gettys, all the ideas go back to Rome history and Julius Caesar, the emperor at the top. The billionaire think that they are immortal because they want their genetic line to keep hold of power over civilization, and that they get their kicks by watching it like a chessboard. When you look at classic status of the Roman and Greek gods, it can be beautiful art, but it is really just about controlling power. Men have always used gods and religion to track the people and the brainwashing them with propaganda so that can control planet Earth. People on the bottom of the mortal keeps trying to work their way up from the gutter, and as long as they have some security, a house and a car and food to eat, they go on accepting how it is and believing that they can become gods someday too, but nobody ever reaches the top. The gods of capitalism are the ones who make us all sick trying to believe that myth that they were needed to become rich to be happy in the first place. It is just keeps us working for them and hating each other. We need to see the promise of capitalism for what it is, a myth. Billionaires are not happy. They are miserable and psychopathic because they live in a fantasy world. I am happy and healthy right down here on the streets that all gods. I am down here with a simple life, with the trees and the fresh air and just the sun on my skin, my Cuban music, a simple diet, friend, and conversations, life without owning anything or trying to chase after money or immortality or fame or power, just loving in the heart that all you need. I am happy without anything. Than they are with everything. We are all the same anyway. At the end, we all go right back to dirt on the planet. No different than one another. You don't need to believe in myth. All we need to do is find love in our heart. All you need is right here in front of you.
Medusa and the Real Monsters by me, Teresa. What does it mean to be seen as a monster? Ask any woman who's been raped and then blamed for it. Think about Medusa. In the myth, she was once the most beautiful mortal woman in the world with the most gorgeous hair. Poseidon wanted her so much that he took her into a temple and raped her. The gods were jealous and angry, but they blamed her and punished her by turning her into a damn snake. She became so horrible that the sight turned others to stone. and nobody could even approach her. Perseus finally came with his mirror shield and chopped her head off. Today, people still think Perseus was the hero of the story. But that's not the way I look at it. I'm here to tell you the real way to think about it. Nobody understands Medusa. People never think about her perspective. It's easier to just call someone a monster by what you see on the outside. People refuse to try and understand and ask the question, how did she get that way? None of it was Medusa's fault. It was those gods and men led around by their sexual desires and big egos, not by their brains or their hearts, that turned her into a monster to begin with. People never think about how somebody they see who's different, they are and looks like a monster, actually ended up in a situation they are in. Instead, society blames them for what happened and only sees what's on the outside. How are there so many myths and legends around the world about women being evil? I can tell you, you're reading things written by men. If a woman in our society gets raped, or if a boy gets molested by a priest, they have to deal with it for the rest of their lives. Because society sees them and they see themselves as monsters, as no good, as evil and wicked. But the evil force was the person who did it to begin with, and the society and the churches that protect them. Myth and legend can come down to the government controlling what people believe. In the case of women, those who benefit from patriarchy created myths to enforce the particle structure. So when you read about Medusa, what you're getting is what somebody wanted you to believe about women's nature. Some people have no choice from the beginning about how they ended up where they are. On this street, lots of us had jobs, homes, kids, families, everything, and it was all taken away for some reason. Totally out of our control, like a medical bill or an accident where someone gets hit by a car or truck. Some of us were put out on the street because someone took advantage of us, or we were laid off and lost our jobs, or something bad happened. That's not our fault. The way someone appears from a certain race can make it worse. For people who are Native Americans, for example, everything is harder because of the history of this country and what was done to us. And it's much harder to get out of poverty and live in a system built on all that. And then society turns around and calls us monsters because of what was done to us and tells us it's all our own fault. People who pass by say it's our own fault that you are the way you are. Then all they see is the outside. but often somebody in power put us in this situation to begin with, just like Medusa. The European myth, women are monsters and dangerous creatures who need to be watched and controlled. But it's men who have always been the real monsters. If you walk down the street today, you'll see a man looking at a woman. And he's led by sexual appetite, not by his mind or heart. Many men care about is getting a woman in bed. You can see it every day. A man looking at a woman, and a young woman who's been taught by society to dress up a certain way. Since she's trained at a young age to get them to look without knowing any better. And often once he gets her, he's gone. He might take her out for a couple of days or a couple of years, but after that, he's done. And nearly every time he's been cheating on the side. It's the men in the world who have dark hearts, who are the monsters. But in the myths and legends, like Medusa, it's the victim who ends up responsible. European American governments are full of just those kinds of men who have dark hearts and only take what they want from people below them. Just like Poseidon. Men who think they are gods run the economy and control everything and put all the people into bad situations and create monsters in the first place. A few rich men at the top take advantage of everyone else. And of course, they have always had control of the mythology too. That goes all the way back past ancient Greece. Make up myths to make themselves out to be the heroes, like Perseus, and convince people that everything is their own fault. As if people could only put themselves out of it, they would stop being monsters. But that's the real myth people believe. Myths about females are different and in different cultures. In some of them, people respect the earth and women, African and Native American cultures, and some Asian ones have more respectful versions of female figures like Medusa. For example, in Chinese mythology, the half-snake mother goddess, Nuwa, is a positive version of a snake and not a monster. I'm descendant from the Navajo, and my people see the world as completely interconnected. Everything is our brother and sister, and women are the life givers, creators, leaders, and heroes of the stories. If people could break stories like Medusa down and look at it the right way, they would better understand how women are treated in our society compared to others. Even nowadays, rich men can rape women and there's nothing she can do about it. People will deny things and protect him and say she is a liar, especially if he's among the white men who run the government. Governments have always given the legends and myths, the ignorance and propaganda down to the people. Men make up myths and believe women are evil because it covers up what is happening all over the world. Right in front of us, as the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. You see all these people who are homeless, and it's the same everywhere, from China to Russia to the Middle East, but people on the bottom are blamed for what happened to them by the people on the top. Up there, they live by a myth that hides what's really going on. I relate to Medusa more than any other story because I have seen things with my own two eyes. No matter which way you think the myth went, she's the one who was condemned for it. But he gets away with it because he was this high god. Today in the real world, it all boils down to the same thing, greed. Society wants to make up all these monsters, but at the end of the day, it's evil and good, plain and simple. And it all boils down to money and power. One way or another, if it were a poor man who raped a woman like Medusa, he'd be sitting in prison. Think about it. Editor's note. The ancient version of Medusa was told by the Roman poet Ovid, who wrote the poem Metamorphoses in Latin. Ovid wrote myths about the women's perspective and was no friend of kings. He compared emperors and gods to rapists, and he was banished forever from Rome. Tristan, Teresa, and Ovid are on the same page and would have a great conversation.
Street legend Shaky Jake, written by Mike Jones. Shaky Jake Woods was allowed on stage at the Ann Arbor Jazz and Blues Festival in 1973 by one of the main acts and performed live. Shaky Jake claimed the people of Ann Arbor would not let him leave town, so he decided to make Ann Arbor his home. Shaky Jake was born on August 14, 1925 in Little Rock, Arkansas. He was once proclaimed to be born on Halloween, October 31st, one of the many myths of our old friend and legend and storyteller. Historical fun fact, Shaky Jake was born the same year of Malcolm X. He arrived in Ann Arbor, Michigan in 1973 from Saginaw, Michigan. The summer of 2023 marks 50 years since Shaky Jake came to live and perform in our beloved city, Ann Arbor, Michigan. On the Move was Mr. Wood's favorite and famous saying. People of Ann Arbor, including myself, would holler Shaky. His normal response was, "I'm on the move." I would say he was about 5'8" tall, dark-skinned guy wearing a suit, bow tie, big top hat, and scarf. You would never, ever see Shaky Jake without his guitar in hand. Jake and his omnipresent three-string guitar were seen daily on Main Street, most often in front of Peaceable Kingdom, as well as Main Street and Liberty Street and State near Nichols Arcade. Among locals, he was the best-known person in Ann Arbor. Everybody loved We Baked the Jake t-shirts. After he passed away in 2007, Peaceable Kingdom kept his guitar in their window as a tribute to him. Last week, I asked over 100 people in the downtown Ann Arbor area, have they ever heard of Shaky Jake? 50% never heard of the Ann Arbor legend. Those who answered no got a brief A2 history lesson and a YouTube referral. Yeah, check out Shaky Jake Woods on YouTube. From those who answered yes, I got to hear Shaky Jake stories. One guy, who is a townie, said Shaky danced with his wife and daughter in the 1980s. One lady was so happy to learn that I was writing about Shaky Jake because it reminded her of the old Ann Arbor. Another townie, Dan, who used to work and cook at the Del Rio restaurant, said Shaky Jake used to come into the restaurant every day and order a bowl of chili and a hamburger on the house, and as a result, they never had tip money stolen from the tip jar because everybody knew, including street people, that Shaky Jake ate there regularly. Overall, I enjoyed having conversations about our old friend and educating new Ann Arborites and those just visiting. When Shaky Jake passed away, in his honor, Ann Arborites gave him a going-home parade through downtown Ann Arbor. Ann Arborites deserve a statue and a painted mural to remember Shaky Jake Woods, 1925 to 2007.
Bear Myths and Cultural Power by me, Cindy Gear, also known as Kung Fu Panda. For me, myths and legends are the glue that holds a culture together. Traditional myths are all about protection and self-preservation in the face of invasion and industrialism. I, myself, am Native American, a Kaska from northern burl forests of British Columbia and the Yukon Territories. I have two traditional names. One is Gasagadani, King Salmon, and the other is my warrior name, Kulima, Fire Woman. My father came from the Tahltan tribe, but I was adopted into a Presbyterian family later in life. I returned to my ancestral people and lived with them. So I am the perfect example of an effort to destroy any old traditions, to take a person out of her ancestral world and deposit her into a new one. But I've always preserved and reconnected with the old myths, honoring and following my cultural traditions. My grandfather, Mike Johnny, was one of the last great medicine shamans, a hunter, a trapper, who lived off the land his entire life. The same way my people lived for thousands of years. He worked as a mule driver on barges on the river trained up the Erie Canal. But he was also a famous bone setter, a healer. The honor for me was always been that he was a traditional shaman. During the invasion of Christianity and Catholics and the Presbyterian Church tried to wipe out all the native shaman in cooperation with the Canadian government. People don't understand how devastating that actually was. Many shamans, like my grandfather, subverted them. Grandpa Mike shook the hands of the priests and said he wanted to be a catechist, but would still practice medicine in secret. He set up runners between tribes who would send secret messages when someone got sick so that he would speak out and heal those who were ailing. The Catholic Church controlled everything and using religion to manipulate people, but the old native myths survived, even in the face of extermination. When my grandmother was 11 years old, she went through the Great Disease, also known as the Spanish Flu. 2 out of 7 families in our tribe died out completely. There were full tribes that were wiped out. Our chief was smart enough to tell everyone to go to their separate hunting lodges. And everyone split during the pandemic and did as he advised. Religion was always about control, but what people call mythology was about people surviving in the face of religion by keeping traditional knowledge and wisdom alive. Grandpa Mike was called a bear shaman since it was his totem animal. There were many myths and legends about bears. Some of the native myths about bears came out of a similarity between humans and bear bodies. If you strip a bear of its fur and its head and lay it out, it looks like a human body. That's why they called it Bear Brother. It's like a human being. So there are all these stories about animals and their similarities to humans. We had our trickster stories. We had Wolverine Man, which was similar to Coyote Man in other tribes. These sacred animal stories were passed down to our families for thousands of years because they taught people wisdom, misheld cultures together because they were all about taboo, things you did and you never did. Stories tell us how we could behave or not behave. So, say winters were really harsh. There were myths told to warn people about being greedy and selfish, hoarding food. We had sacred stories told to children so they knew that it was customary when another tribe was starving during winter and came asking, you had to share with them. We had tripod caches set up in high places to keep bears out and a ladder, and the rule was that you only ate enough and never more than what you needed. But some of that we learned came from traditional animal stories that everybody knew, carrying some moral lessons about how to share with people and survive in a harsh environment. In some cases, it's 80 below zero, and all you have is some wood and some fire. Myths come from pressure out of real natural environments. Bears are territorial animals and come to have personalities as legendary figures in Kaska myths, since each one could become old and famous in its own area. One of the stories about Grandpa Mike, I love this one, is the time he was about 2 inches from a bear's face. He was cutting up a huge moose and slicing it up. He had blood all the way up his arms, and he looked up and a bear was right there. But his gun was on the other side of the moose. So my grandfather had to climb over the dead moose to reach to the gun. But he still refused to shoot his own totem animal and just quietly walked away out of respect, even giving up his kill. This became a legend about him, but it tells us how we think about the and treat animals and each other in the world. Sacred stories teach us how to live and survive in the world. There's one famous Kaska legend about a woman's encounter with a bear. The tribe was packing up to migrate for the season, and this herbalist had the last member of the tribe to leave. But it took her a while to get all her plants and medicines picked up. As she was going up the trail, everyone else had already left. Suddenly, a massive grizzly rose up behind her. The only thing she could think to do was grab her curved knife and quickly as she could slice all the way up from the bottom to the chest cavity, all its guts spilled out. She grabbed her bag and ran down the trail to find the tribe. At first, they couldn't believe it, but they went back and found the body, tanned its hide, and set out this huge bear rug. It made her famous as a well-known woman who rose into a legendary one and then became a source of mythical figure. It's a very powerful story about women and her ability to survive on her own. Today, mythology is being wiped out, and there's some sort of social engineering to create a manipulated, controlled society using technology without any mythology to tell us right and wrong. We must stand as one mind, body, and soul within a resistance of unity. We must come together as a human race and realize that each and every one of us is an individual who can say no, that we do not have to participate in this social experiment. Society will not survive being bankrupt in emotions and community if we have no stories to hold us together. So there's a word I came up with for a modern society: Illuminati oligarchy corporatocracy. We are being strangled and yoked and controlled by big tech, powerful billionaires, and government in ways that nobody totally understands. The concept of mythology is a powerful people's unification against the onslaught of a new ideology that has been thrust onto humanity. We must counter the reality of this new technology, understanding of humans, by not participating in the algorithm of insanity. Mythology is a way to get back to the root and traditions of where we come from. Stories were a way of surviving in the face of the world. Back to Greece, Babylon, Egypt, India, all of the world's traditions. We as Americans have to decide what value the old traditions have for us, from our families and back to the ancestors we came from.
This is an audio recording of an article at a Ground Cover News. This is James Manning speaking for this article. Title of it is "We Use Myths to Cope," drawn from conversations with James Manning, Ground Cover number 16. The article goes as such. Okay, mythology is totally necessary on the street. You have to deal with reality in this world whether you like it or not. You are here on this planet. You are in it. You are part of this thing one way or another, so deal with it. Here's your bed, and now you have to lie in it. But in order to handle reality, you also need to cultivate an imagination. Just like music or art, myth is a tool that humans evolve so that we can handle living in this world. Whether you are trying to score a cup of coffee from McDonald's in 2023, or a peasant in Egypt in 10,000 BCE trying to get enough grain smashed to make a patty of bread, you are stuck in that situation and there's your reality. Deal with it. One way is to use your imagination and spend time thinking about what you could be. Myth has the power for people who are in tough life situations because they relate to it in an immediate way. We have this ability to have dreams and visions or make up fiction and stories or ponder in whatever form that takes. You can talk about science fiction, other dimensions, auras, magic, or ghosts and the paranormal, any of that. When we think about possibilities of those things beyond us in that moment, we are not having anxiety about where the next meal is coming from. As far as anyone on the street or in some position of vulnerability, mythology speaks for itself. In a lot of myths, there are situations where a common man rises up to become the hero of a nation, or an underdog character rises up to affect the society around him, and his life takes on a bigger meaning, and a profound story develops out of his life. You could say that indicates delusions of grandeur, but the power dynamic is what makes mythology popular. It appeals to the common person, the underdog, the blue collars, lower classes, or people on the bottom of society. Myth empowers them to imagine their situation differently and think of how they could potentially escape or resist whatever situation they happen to be in. No matter how they're treated on the street by others, that person feels like they are part of some bigger story. And then it provides itself relief and therapy because you have at least one moment where you are off in this other world and not faced with some of the harsh reality. Myth can be used like medicine. The imagination is like a drug that keeps us alive. Mythology is closely related to music and art because you get some relief out of it instantaneously. You feel the vibes enter and spawn so much energy and bring so much relaxation and harmony to your mind. In that moment, when you read a myth or listen to a song you love or draw or create something, or you ponder what's out there in space or beyond time, where we came from as beings, how we should live our lives, gods or science or the paranormal or what have you. In those moments, you are not thinking about your bills or how you're going to scrounge for something to eat. I use mythology to cope all the time, even subconsciously. Without my own knowledge, I just let my mind wander. Humans have to have mythology because it's in our nature. We evolved the ability to have creative expression to keep our minds functioning at any level as we get through life. Imagination is an unbelievably powerful and underrated tool. Sometimes it's the only way you can get away from whatever situation you are in on the street. There's one thing every sentient living creature asks itself during life at some point, which is, who am I and what is my place in the universe? Mythology conveniently shows up to give you a nonsensical character without a real purpose, but it actually does provide meaning because it speaks to that point and provides some kind of answer for that question. So of course you find it everywhere. It's a totally natural response to being alive on this planet, especially to somebody who's nobody among the billions of the people in the world, to reimagine ourselves as heroes and gods. Originally, the myths were meant to explain mysterious things like natural catastrophes, earthquakes, volcanoes, lightnings, and that sort of stuff. People explain stuff using stories about gods and whatnot, but they also want to exercise their imaginations and imagine the greatness and the possibility of things beyond. We have fabulous mechanisms for stealing our attention away. but we always drift in our thoughts and we like to exercise our imaginations and ask what could possibly be out there. Beyond what we know, beyond what's right in front of us, I think mythology is just a natural evolved occurrence, since it's human nature to come up with stories and narratives about greater and better things out there. Just so we can cope with the fact that we're down here living on this really chaotic world. Our modern-day rat race after material wealth and power in the world is just so pointless. You go after getting a bunch of stuff that you don't need. You really don't. You can appreciate the fact that you have sentience, that you are living, that you are here and awake. Just the sheer fact of consciousness is a blessing that, in a religious sense or anything, but just the ability to bear witness to reality, it's an incredible gift that we have and we tend to squander because we get lost in these other things. The greatest lesson of the world is turning your back on temptations and riches for the sake of the greater good. Mythology has always been about that journey, turning away from desire and towards something better. That's the basic journey of life, and it's what we are all struggling with. Whether you are on the street or not, everybody chases self-fulfillment, but you have to know where to draw the line and not just eat until you are sick. Spiritually, people on the street are more sensitive to the pain and the suffering and the reality in the world. I throw rich people a bone and forgive them because in my mind they are all actually just stupid. Many rich people have never experienced pain. Thanks to compartmentalized lives, they live in an entirely different reality. There's an alternative reality, but then people on the street who have actually suffered know things better, and yet we have to use our imaginations more just to stay healthy. We are living in a time of such convenience that there are people who are totally oblivious to what life could possibly hold beyond a Netflix subscription. Their only encounter with the world is through some made-up television screen.
Lions need Kaepernick. Scoop Stevens. Autumn is near, and another Detroit Lions football season is here. The Lions need two quality quarterbacks, not just one. The Lions should acquire Colin Kaepernick because he has Super Bowl experience. Even if the Lions were to have a great season and make it to the Super Bowl, they would probably lose. With Kaepernick on the team, they are increasing their odds of winning. Kaepernick has been putting himself out there recently to attract offers from major league teams, but so far unsuccessfully. The likely reason for this is that in 2016 he took a knee during the national anthem to protest police profiling and police brutality, which resulted in being blasted by the public, including presidential candidate Donald Trump. He was shunned by NFL owners after that. But times have changed since then. Trump is no longer in power. There has been a pandemic in reaction to it, and we are well into the World Economic Forum's Reset 2.0 with its implications for human freedom and agency. For more on this, see Robert Kennedy's book, The Rural Anthony Fauci, Bill Gates, Big Pharma, and the Global War on Democracy and Public Health. Wearing masks like subservient slaves became the new normal. The top 1% benefit greatly from people being homebound. Think Jeff Bezos and Amazon. None of this would have been possible without the police state. For the first time, white Americans have experienced something of what black Americans have always experienced in America. The antebellum slave patrols kept African-American slaves in their place. The postmodern police state keeps Americans under house arrest. It wasn't legitimate back then, and it isn't legitimate now. Maybe there is a lesson for all of us in Kaepernick's symbolic act of protest. and maybe the Detroit Lions could benefit from recognizing the legitimacy of the act. Time is running out for the Lions to win a Super Bowl. We are on the verge of a new age consciousness. Football will become obsolete. The Lions should sign a one-year contract with Kaepernick and see what happens.
And about a catch-22, Terry DeMars struggles accessing medical care battling cellulitis. Publisher Lindsay Kalka, read by Terry DeMar. Cellulitis may look like dermatitis, but it's actually caused by staph and strep infection, often contracted by bacterial infection, encouraged by low immune systems and large pores. Terry DeMar, ground cover vendor number 322, was diagnosed with cellulitis at St. Joe's Emergency Room in 2014. Over these 10 years, it has cost her jobs, relationships, and even housing. After struggling to get a proper diagnosis as of late, she now resorts to taking expired antibiotics to keep the infection and its side effects at bay. As a result, the medical conditions that prompts doctors to take her illness seriously are hidden. Doctors blame me for self-medicating, but they don't provide me medication. It's a big vicious circle. I'm just trying to stay out of the hospital. DeMar discussed incidences in the hospital, describing bad experiences of being traumatized and then being accused of misconduct, forced to leave, or transfer hospitals and doctors. When they don't want to take the responsibility, they blame you. I got accused of talking to people in the lobby for accidentally spilling water for the first 5 and 6 years. Her first doctor prescribed her nonstop antibiotics. DeMar was taking 20 antibiotics a day. But ever since that first doctor, she has struggled to receive medication and treatment that is aligned with her health problems. She was referred to infectious disease center at the local hospital. But she claimed that her doctor never followed through by accurately conveying the severity of to the infectious disease doctor. Consequently, she has been denied the care needed ever since. She explained that typical treatment for cellulitis is to get put on IV and to take antibiotics, but that treatment is denied constantly for DeMar. Yet she has never met anyone with cellulitis as bad as hers. 3 or 4 months ago, she was ordered a biopsy, but she was still taking old antibiotics and impacted the test results. Now, DeMar describes her cellulitis as systemic and in her body. But as a month ago, she is on her third doctor who doesn't believe antibiotics should be part of her treatment plan. DeMar thinks her mental diagnosis of ADHD influences the medical gaslighting. They're saying I'm being delusional and that I don't have cellulitis. People tell me that cellulitis is in my head. It is a big red swollen, and I don't rub on it. That is an infection. If doesn't understand that, what is a doctor good for? I don't want people him-hawing around anymore. It's gone on too long. Medical gaslighting is a term to describe when medical practitioners power to dismiss health problems of patients, enforcing stereotypes that women are irrational, hysterical, or people with mental health are delusional and have psychosomatic symptoms. When it comes to physical illness, if you don't get things in writing, your mental illness won't. Once you get labeled, you don't get a chance to change it. DeMar has battled this cellulitis for a decade, and now what she needs. I need a white blood cell count. I need to take 7 days off of my antibiotics so I can get a control of the pus test. But I am being denied these things. I am scared to pause the antibiotics because I can go septic, and then I'll die. Somebody's dropping the ball, and DeMar hopes the article will motivate doctors to do their job.